engine running. Liftoff. We have a liftoff.
Folks, I have come to a conclusion, and I just think I'm going to have to shift gears here, and I'm going to have to do it intentionally, something I didn't expect to have to do, but I think it needs to be done. Bear with me here for a minute. I want to play you something. That needs to be played, needs to be said. Today I started looking, and you'll have to forgive me because I didn't intend to start the show this way, even as of 15 minutes ago. But it dawned on me that no one else has done this today, not on TV, not on radio, and I think it needs to be done. I think it must be done. Today is the 150th anniversary of the end of the United States Civil War, and it is getting no coverage, and it should be getting wall-to-wall coverage. It is that which defines us as a people, even more so than the Revolution. It shapes us as a Civil War, as a war of Northern aggression, as the salvation from the sin, the process, the sanctification of the nation. It's a big deal. I am reminded, in fact, what took me so long to come on air, I had to go find this. One of my favorite documentary series, in fact, it is my favorite documentary series ever, is Ken Burns' Civil War. And I knew on the soundtrack there was this, a quote worth listening to.
We have shared the incommunicable experience of war. We have felt, we still feel, the passion of life to its top. In our youths, our hearts were touched with fire. Oliver Wendell Holmes.
Justice Holmes of the United States Supreme Court, years later reflecting on the American Civil War, a Civil War that no one is reflecting upon today. I had one of the privileges in life after working here at WSB was to go to the cemetery with Captain Herb, who is Oakland Cemetery down? Yeah, and just so the monuments there and graves there. Oakwood. Oakland is the Audubon Cemetery near my house growing up in Louisiana. Oakwood. Near my house growing up in Louisiana and the plantations of the Felicianas where Jefferson Davis's family was buried. They made their home there, his first wife buried there. Here at Oakwood, the cemeteries, the graves, Captain Herb knew them all. Well, I don't think we as a nation reflect enough on this. We have gotten to the point now where it's the instant sensationalism of the cops shooting people, the hands up, don't shoot. Too many people profit from keeping the wounds open from the Civil War. Too many people, and it's on both sides. It's a bipartisan phenomenon. And history is rewritten in such a way that you can't honor someone like General Lee because he fought for the Confederacy when he freed his slaves and viewed himself fighting for his country, Virginia. Up until the Civil War, this nation referred to itself as these United States. After the Civil War, it became popular to say the United States. The vernacular changed, the shifting changed, but the sentiment under the surface of this country still remains 150 years later. And that 150th year, that anniversary, that surrender at Appomattox, it was today. And hardly a word from anyone. I think it is as big a news as it is, it's just as big news that no one's talking about it today, when I think we should be, because so many of the scars, physical and mental, emotional, relational, in the country still remain from a surrender that had a man a few days subsequent, 150 years ago, not been shot in a theater, could have been vastly different, given what he wanted for reconciliation in the country, Abraham Lincoln. We'll see. A few more thoughts on this, but first let's go check with Doug Turnbull, looking at 285.
Love Oakland Cemetery, man. That's a great spot in Atlanta. Everybody that lives here should see. 514 WSB on the southeast perimeter. The crash has been moved to the right. 285 eastbound between Boulder Crest and Flat Shoals. Traffic is slow, though, coming around from the 675 area. I'm up over 285 on the north side perimeter now. We can tell you westbound brake lines start right about Georgia 400 over to 75 and Cobb. Southbound just sluggish in zones, trying to get through Vinings down to I-20. On the interloop 285 north, it's sluggish between Paces Ferry and 75. East and southbound stacked in, though, from Ashford Doubleday on the north side around to 78 on the east side, Eric.
The problem, to a degree, in dealing with the Civil War is because so many people view it so differently. In the nutshell argument of the Civil War was on slavery, and that has become, that has ended the defining of the Civil War. But for a lot of people historically in the South, even after the Civil War, it was never really about slavery. It was, and don't kid yourselves, and there are a lot of Southerners who like to deny that slavery had nothing to do with it or was ancillary to it. Slavery was a very big deal, but another big deal was paying for railroads, of all things, out in the Gadsden Purchase. The government wanted to build a railroad, and Southern states thought that the territory should pay for it. They shouldn't be taxed to pay for it. It was a states' rights movement as much as it was a slavery movement. It was about the sovereignty of these United States as opposed to the United States. It was a General Robert E. Lee, respected by everyone, who felt he had to give up his rank in the United States military to go defend his country, not his state, but his country, Virginia. The Civil War could have been a divorce. It wound up not being a divorce. It wound up, though, remaining an acrimonious relationship. And now, to a degree, ironically, a fluke of history, the South has become resurgent. Atlanta's motto, resurgence. More Americans are moving to the South now, where there is still a strain of chivalry, militarism, heroism, a fatalism that doesn't reside in the North. You know, on Sunday in church, the preacher in this sermon mentioned that there are, I think, seven times as many tornadoes in the Midwest as there are in the South. But most fatalities from tornadoes come from the South, and part of that is that Southern nature. The Stonewall Jackson Presbyterianism, I'm as safe on the battlefield as I am in my bed, and then he was dead. If it's my time, it's my time. There's nothing I can do about it. The fatalism that remains historically centered around a historic trait of the Civil War, and these are things that I think should be explored and discussed more than they are, but we can't because it's all about slavery and it's racism. It's so much more complicated. We are 150 years removed from the Civil War, and we have our first black president of the United States. I think that in and of itself is notable. I really do. The Civil War gave us some amazing songs, too. Here's one to close out this segment.
Mine eyes have seen the glory of the coming of the Lord. He is trampling out the vintage where the grapes of wrath are stored. He hath loosed the fateful lightning of his terrible swift sword. His truth is marching on. Glory, glory, hallelujah. Glory, glory, hallelujah. Glory, glory, hallelujah. His truth is marching on.
News 95.5 and AM 750, WSB.
Welcome back here at the 150th anniversary of Lee surrendering to Granite Appomattox. A big deal, or should be a big deal, but everybody seems to not be paying attention to it. Keith in Dallas, welcome to the program. How are you?
Hey, partner. Listen, this is a huge subject for me as far as I'm concerned. The events that led up to the Civil War, slavery, for instance, slavery was only an issue because the North and the South wanted it to, either the North did not want it and the South did want it to expand into the Western states. And it was all about political power. Slavery as an issue, other than that, didn't have any weight at all. Lincoln didn't care if he freed some of the slaves, all of the slaves, or none of the slaves.
You're right. The problem, I think, for folks in the South is that over time, slavery became the defining issue of the Civil War, and it wasn't at first. You're absolutely right, and anyone who says it was is more of a revisionist than any who say it wasn't, but it became the defining issue. Lincoln made it so with the Emancipation Proclamation. To begin with, in Lincoln's statements and journals and whatnot, it was very clear that this was not for him a war about slavery. In fact, he wanted to be clear to try to avoid the secession issue. That it wasn't. It was beginning with political issues. It was the nation growing in ways in which it did not come to terms with how it was growing. But we should also point out as well that there was a component of abolitionist movement in the country led by Christians. In an age where everyone wants to hate Christians, it was a Christian movement, the abolition movement. And in fact, preachers in the South, there were some who tried to defend slavery from the Bible, but they were competing against the largest narrative of the Bible. The Israelites leaving Egypt, called to the Promised Land. Much of the gospel music sung on plantations derived from that narrative, crossing the Jordan. You can't escape the Christian themes and the abolition movement, which came to define ultimately the end of the Civil War, but it was vastly more complicated than that. And unfortunately, I think too many people that they focus on slavery, which for a lot of Americans it was a very big deal given their ancestry and where their ancestors were and what they were doing. But it wasn't the only thing. Such a complicated subject, more complicated than many people want to give it credit for being. But this is the 150th anniversary of it ending. We'll be back with a few more phone calls and a shift of topic. Welcome back. Let's get into some phone calls here on this topic. The 150th anniversary of Lee surrendering to Grant. At Appomattox, I wasn't going to start the show this way. In fact, at the top of the hour, I'll get into what I wanted to talk about in the first hour. We may not even get to politics tonight, fair warning. Life and culture and war and whatnot. Let's get into this, though, with some calls. Lewis in Sanford, North Carolina, you're up next. Welcome to the program.
Hey, Eric. I'm pretty proud of our heritage, especially growing up in the state of Georgia. As you go back and review that over the years, I believe we would have had a different turnout how we do things in Georgia if we have not burned down the entire state and had a different turnout, but that's neither here nor there. But also to consider that the British were really hoping that we would split.
Yeah.
Because the United States was set up where there would be no boundary lines whatsoever, and that would have made a very different America. We would have had a really bad turnout, I think, if that had happened. But we also had a little bit of war up in St. Albans, Vermont, which was a little lost history no one knows about. But the major thing is there would be no boundary lines in the United States. And that was, I think that was out of the hand of God. I don't think that was out of the hand of the soldier because of the way this country was founded.
You know, it's funny you should say the hand of God in there, Lewis. I was, before he left the vice presidency. I had lunch with Dick Cheney. He invited me up to his house in Washington, the vice president's mansion. And we got into the discussion. It was me, Charles Krauthammer, Fred Barnes, Bill Sammons, David Addington as chief of staff, Liz Cheney, his daughter, a few others. And it got into the issue of the providential nature of the nation. One of the greatest books I've read. And it really is, I recommend it to all of you. The name of the book is 1864. That's the name of the book, 1864. I like reading histories and biographies more than most anything else. And Cheney, in his conversation, said it is interesting, whether you believe in divine providence or God or whatnot, that in 1864, the Union was losing. The president of the United States, Abraham Lincoln, was about to lose. There was a growing Confederate movement in Chicago. There was a growing Confederate movement in Ohio. There was a growing Confederate movement in Vermont, in New Hampshire. New York City became a hotbed of Confederate sentiment. George McClellan, the general in charge, he had to be relieved. Things were bleak for the Union. And then December came. Well, Lincoln was able to win re-election in a highly contested race. And then December came, and Sherman captured Atlanta, burning it to the ground, led his trail of devastation through Georgia, delivering Savannah to the president Christmas of 1864, Charleston falling shortly thereafter. It just all came in a wave. And then the war comes to an end. Now, fighting lingers on until July or so. There are Southern troops who refuse to give up. There are Southern commanders who refuse to give up. Jefferson Davis is on the run. It'll be a while before he's caught. Lincoln is assassinated next week, 150 years ago. And his plans for Lincoln's plans, best anyone can figure out, largely was, let's just put it all back together. Bygones. Malice toward none. But then the radical Republicans took over and they decided that the South must pay. And a lot of the tone and tenor of the conversations about the Civil War really come from the Reconstruction period, not from the war itself. And it makes you wonder how much different would it have been had Lincoln lived. Really does. You do have to wonder. In alternative histories, people have written books on these things. What would have happened had Lincoln lived based on what we know about what he wanted to do? I just say, and listen, again, and maybe I need to apologize. I didn't intend to do a first hour on this today, but even getting into it, it hit me right before the show. This is the 150th anniversary of Appomattox, and no one in the media is talking about it, and it's a defining moment. In American history, it is a defining moment in our lives. There are families in this country who are kin to each other with different spellings of their last names because the family split over the Civil War and they changed their last name spelling so they would not be accused of being associated with a Yankee sympathizer or a Southern sympathizer. There are states that exist, West Virginia, for example, that carved out of the Confederacy to ally with the North, now considered a Southern state again. The map shifted. The map changed. Families changed. The South rebuilt. Would we have been better divided? A Confederacy and a Union? I don't think so. This is where I part ways with a lot of my friends in the South who I get the heroism and the fatalism and the legacy and the heritage and the history. Now, I am half Swedish. I grew up in the Middle East. I didn't grow up in the South. But I think the world is better off because of what the United States was able to grow up and become as a united force in the world for good. We do have a bad legacy with slavery in the country. We do have a stain in our history that bled through into the Constitution that took a war ultimately to resolve. But I think we have become a good people, a great people. And I think that in losing the history and in losing touch with our history and what happened 150 years ago and the revision that both sides have engaged in, I think we lose touch with what ultimately made us great. It's only been 4 years since the military war dead in this country, excluding the Civil War, has equaled the total dead from the Civil War. That's how big of a deal the Civil War was. And I'm just appalled by the lack of coverage of the end of it this day, 150 years ago. But now you must forgive me. I must move on when we come back.
Atlanta's Evening News with Eric Erickson. Eric Erickson. Set a button on your car radio for every day when you drive home from work. News 95.5 and AM 750 WSB.
I apologize. There were others who wanted to share and discuss on this war, but I really do need to move on to other topics. I can't do an entire 2 hours on it. I apologize, but I did want to make everybody aware of it. And we'll have more of these discussions. The assassination of Lincoln 150 years ago comes up. There's some breaking news, though, you need to know about. Just hit the wires 14 minutes ago, it says. Business Insider is reporting a source with knowledge of Hillary Clinton's plans has confirmed she will officially announce her 2016 presidential bid this weekend, followed by immediate campaign travel. Undecided is whether it'll be Saturday or Sunday, as if we didn't see it coming. When we come back, well, stick around, folks. You're going to want to not miss the next hour.
Three, two, one, zero. All engine running. Liftoff. We have a liftoff.
Now I really need to apologize to you. Welcome. It's Eric Erickson here. News 95.5 AM 750 WSB. The phone number 404-872-0750, 1-800-WSB-TALK. Yeah, I always feel guilty knowing the expectations of the show, and it's evening, it's Atlanta's Evening News, and I'm not really getting into news. This is where I wanted to start the first hour tonight, and then pivot to the news in the second hour. Well, now I'm on the second hour, and I'm starting with where I wanted the first hour, but I'm going to do it. And you'll just have to deal with, maybe you want a respite from the politics as well. And maybe I'm in more of a reflective mood than I should, and I haven't wanted to say anything on the radio this week about it, but a friend's father died Easter morning. The funeral was in Acworth today. I went up to the funeral. It was Mars Hill Presbyterian. I guess somebody behind me whispered that the church sanctuary holds about 300. It was standing room only. And it was a blessing to me for this reason, to be there. I have been thinking more and more. My 9-year-old, she's now at the point. So my 9-year-old was with her mother last night, and they were discussing mathematics and how my wife, Christy, tells Evelyn, she says they're studying ancient Egypt in third grade. And Christy tells Evelyn that the Egyptians used a whole lot of math to build the pyramids. And Evelyn, without missing a beat, responds, and a whole lot of Hebrews, too. She knows her history. Yes, she knows her history. But so she's been asking more and more questions and trying to explain to her the desire to be liked. Is that a bad thing? People want to be liked. But to prioritize being liked over being faithful to God, being respected, being good at your work, where do you balance it? We've been having these questions and thinking about it with my 6-year-old now. Starting Little League, and I can't be at a lot of the games. There's a game tomorrow, and I would love to pre-tape tomorrow's show and go, but I know the weather's going to be bad, so traffic will be bad. So I feel like I need to be here with you guys when I'd really like to be out there with him. I haven't been able to go to a lot of the games, but how do you build character with a kid? And then you wonder about all those things. Is he going to love the Lord? Or are they going to have that passion that their mom and I have? Are they going to be so consumed by the world They forget about the eternal things that matter. These things have been weighing on me for a while. And then I get to that funeral today for Dan. And, I mean, you got standing room only. One man of the impact he was able to have in a church and being involved with youth group in the church and seeing that. And then thinking about my friend Lucy. And some of you, those of you who work for Turner, for CNN, you probably encountered Lucy, who retired. I was supposed to go to a party. I'm going to tell you about that. But first, speaking of people who impact people every day, Doug Turnbull in that helicopter getting you home from downtown.
And we're using that airborne advantage right now. We're at 613 WSB because we're up over the Brookwood Interchange. We just watched State Patrol with the HERO units block all lanes to get this crash dragged to the right. And now they're all open. 85 northbound, just north of 17th Street, flying over the downtown connector, northbound backups, which stretch at least back to I-20. We're going to get that tail into that in a second, but at least I-20, maybe Turner Field. Southbound is still very slow at 85 and 400 before they're merged, winding all the way down the connector, 85 southbound to I-20. We also have some 20 eastbound backup still passing that earlier trouble at Moreland Avenue. You slow again from 285 to Wesley Chapel in DeKalb. The West Freeway 20 West has been well behaved this afternoon for the drive toward Olympia Springs. Eric?
So my friend Lucy Spiegel, she was my boss at CNN, my goddess, my guide, my champion, my hero, my mentor, my biggest critic. I was telling Jared before the show started, I can't use the exact language. The FCC would throw me in jail. Yes, she's awesome. So if you ever read the Atlantic profile of me that they did back in January, Paul Begala is mentioned in there and talks about how when I first got to CNN, he hated my guts, and it was largely from my first appearance with him. It was so typical CNN. They had what was the show you referenced it? Hollywood Squares. Yeah, Hollywood Squares. It was nine of us in each little square. Plus the anchor, and we're talking about healthcare, Ted Kennedy having died. Well, I didn't get any airtime. This was my last vetting process. I do good here. I get the contract with CNN back in December 2009. And so Lucy comes in during break, and she tells me that I need to, they're going to come to me next, and I need to stand out. So I stood out all right. I called Ted Kennedy a martyr. I do believe I might have brought up unicorns or unicorn farts as well. And Paul Begala was livid. And, I mean, they went to commercial and he was still yelling at me. And I learned subsequent to that he and a number of others marched into Lucy's office and demanded that I not be given the contract. They wanted nothing to do with me. And many of my biggest critics at CNN became some of my very best friends. One of them in particular, who will go nameless, who really led the lobby for them not to hire me, came up to me after the election in 2010 and said that he was so wrong and so appreciated me being there. But anyway, so the day after my spectacular debut with Paul Begala, the Hollywood Squares of CNN, I'm on Sean Hannity in New York. I'm freelancing. I'm on Hannity. I'm in New York. Hannity comes into the green room. Sean looks at me, says, "Last night, wow." That was it. That's all he said. He had heard about it. Different network, and he had heard about it. I knew I'd screwed up. And then Lucy calls me afterwards. And she says, "Toots." She's always calling you sweetie, kid, or toots. She says, "Toots, when I told you to stand out last night, I didn't think you would interpret that as I need to be a blankety blank." Which was great because Paul Begala says after this that he had continued the blow up with her and she told him, "Paul, don't be a blankety blank." It is pretty good advice. I was the rear and he was the front, just in the words used. The different pieces of anatomy she referred to us as. How about that? But then she gave me one of the greatest pieces of advice I've ever gotten. And this is good advice that you should pass on to your kids. And I do mean that, no hyperbole intended. She says, "I know you think we want you to be a moderated voice at CNN. We don't. You can have any opinion you want to have. But if your opinion is not respectful, not respectable, but respectful, you're dead." And I fail at that often, I admit it, but it's kind of the benchmark now. And you must be respectful. And in talk radio, you know, we cut up, and I don't use the left's criticism. I never use the left's criticism of me because there's as much hostility and bias in there as I may direct at them. But on the outside, the benchmark, surrounding yourself with people who are willing to tell you you're an idiot. It is becoming rarer and rarer to find actual friends who are willing to tell you you're an idiot. When you get to, and I still have far to go in my career, but I'm already at the point where people want to be yes men. How do you convey that to your kids? How do you raise your children in this world with those things? I mean, I pick up these pieces of advice. The last piece of advice Lucy gave me was hire an angry Jewish lawyer. And I now give that to friends of mine who are starting out in TV news business. What should I do? Hire an angry Jewish lawyer. She was, yes, that was her last piece of advice to me when I was negotiating CNN and Fox in 2013. Hire an angry Jewish lawyer. She gave great advice. She still gives good advice. I talked to her on the phone today. She gave me some advice. And again, I can't use that language. She used Patton-esque language. How about that? If Patton, Lucy Spiegel, and Montgomery were storming Sicily, she would beat all of them to Messina. But how do you raise your kids in this environment? What advice do you give your kids? I've been thinking about this more and more as these conversations come up with my kids. What exactly do you do? What exactly do you convey? And where is the balance in loving the Lord or loving the world and the worry you have for your kids' salvation if you're a person of faith? All these things. Just been burdened by them, I guess you could say. I hope I'm not boring you people. We'll be right back.
Whoever thought great information could have such an attitude? That's Eric Erickson. Every day, 5 to 7 on News 95.5 and AM 750 WSB.
I recognize this music from back in the day. When I get a lot of questions all the time about what was it like to be at CNN and surrounded by liberals and whatnot. You know, let me be very frank. I love and adore Fox and don't feel like I'm going to get fired every day when I wake up. I like being there. If nothing else, I feel safe being there. But I have tremendous respect for Roger Ailes. Just love him. Proud to be a part of what he's built. But I was very proud to work at CNN as well. I grew up with that network overseas, and it was very meaningful to me to work there. I think it's a liberal network. I do. I think editorially they lean left. I think in their worldview they lean left. But I never once felt like if I wanted to push an issue where I felt like there was an editorial bias, I didn't get a fair shot at combating it. I didn't get a fair shot at my say. And I thought that many of the anchors who are routinely beaten up in talk radio and the like, I think I'm exempting the day part of CNN. But I mean, the Wolf Blitzers, the Anderson Coopers, the John Kings, the Aaron Burnetts, they're wonderful, wonderful people. Genuinely admire and respect them. And I think they're aware of biases and try to make sure stories get told that otherwise wouldn't get told. I love the people there. I do. I don't work there anymore and stay in very close touch with a number of them. Begala Carville is no longer there, but Carville and Mary Matlin have become dear friends. Donna Brazil is a member of my family. She's just a wonderful human being. Gloria Borger, she is a sister from another mother. And I just say I could listen to David Gergen and Ron Brownstein talk about history and polling and stuff. I liked it. But back to the question at hand. When we come back, raising kids. Some of you have thoughts on this. 404-872-0750, 1-800-WSB-TALK. How do you make sure they don't get lost in the world? Been wondering about this. I hope I'm not boring you, but this is on my mind. It's my show. You got to deal with it, I guess, when we come back. Welcome back, the last half hour. Okay, let me just sum up this last... It's kind of a weird show tonight, isn't it? Sorry. Sorry, not sorry, I guess. Let me just sum up the last hour. I don't know, I always feel weird about these things. You know, it's kind of news, politics, and culture thrown in, but tonight it's all this other. I guess I am relating with you guys. So, Here's the thing, and it's been on my mind for quite a while. You know, let me be really honest with you. More so than, well, let me just be very blunt and honest in a way I'm not. You know why I've been thinking about this a lot lately? Been thinking a lot lately because of the RFRA and gay marriage fight. I have. There's a story out today that students at Gordon College up in Massachusetts, they're being prohibited from participating as student teachers in the area around Gordon College because the president of Gordon College came out in support of a letter written to the president months ago that religious organizations should be exempted from his new discrimination policies because of the gay marriage issue. So the students are being punished. And I see more and more young evangelicals wrestling with dealing with not being liked in the world because of their being a Christian. And how do you raise a child in the world to understand that the world not liking you is okay? That you need to love people. I mean, that's one of the things that bothers me about this whole conversation is that Christians are supposedly we hate gays and we don't. Some of my best friends and people that I work with are gay. I love them dearly. But you're presumed to be a hater if you don't want to go along with gay marriage. And how do you convince your kids in a world that revolves around popularity and being liked that's not really important? What's important is the eternal. And I guess you raise them, particularly if you're an evangelical, you worry about these things more than those who aren't. Those who aren't believers, you don't have the struggle, I think, that in this day and age, people who are believers have. The tables have turned. So how do you balance it out? How do you be a light in the world? How do you show people that you love them, even though you may have to disagree on life choices because of your faith? How do you show that you're loved? And part of it, I think, is the world has gotten the idea of love mixed up. You know, the love that Jesus talks about in the Bible, and I don't mean this to be religious, but just bear with me for a second. The love that is the love that we should value, the love that he talked about. It's the love of virtue. It's not the love of passion. It's not the love of you're hot, let's get in bed, passion. It's not that love. It's not the love of will you marry me. It's the love of will you forgive me. It's not the love of let's get hitched. It's the love of your spouse is dying and no longer remembers you, and you're still there holding his hand at the end. How do you convey that love in a world where the idea of love is so mixed up now? And I worry about that with my kids too. I don't let my kids Google me. It's a bad idea for anyone to Google me. So I worry about that in my career. So I go to that funeral today and I see how one person can affect so many. And I wonder, not just am I affecting in a positive way, and again, I ignore the liberal criticisms on this. Am I affecting people in a positive way? And the way I view my role is to be a voice for those who are voiceless, to say the things you guys can't because you don't have access to the microphone or the TV camera. And if nothing else, to not so much be an evangelist to those who are not of our faith and worldview, but to be a defender of and voice for those who are of our worldview, who are frustrated because they can't say the things that want to be said. And I do wonder the impact I have in raising kids. And it's scary to raise kids in the world today. It's a good thing. It is a deeply rewarding thing. Those of you who don't have kids, if you're not married yet, or you're married and you're thinking about having kids, have them. Have them. We were blessed to have two and can't have more. Have as many as you can. In fact, all my friends who have large families say it gets easier when you have three because then you can start pitting them against each other. That's what they say. We can't, but it's rewarding, but it's also terrifying, particularly in this day and age, where, particularly if you're of faith. The world wants you to not do that, and how do you make your kids stand fast in the faith? I think part of it is surrounding them with other people, building communities. I think you got to build a community of friends around you. I do. I think if you don't have a community of good friends who reflect your own values, it becomes hard for your children to reflect your values. They got to see it not just in you, but at times there will come times where they don't want to see it in you, or they won't even pay attention to it in you, but they will to other people who are like you, who they respect. Hey, I'm rambling. I'm sorry. Doug Turnbull, it's time to check traffic downtown and the south side. Uh-oh, I got to get home tonight.
Yeah, 10-4 on that. And then talking about great people there, that buddy of Steve Winslow's there, and also Ken to Charlie's girlfriend there. That's just a tough deal to hear about him. We're also coming up with the one-year anniversary of Cap Hurd's passing. So talking about people that have affected change for a lot of great people, or great people that have affected change for a lot. Those are two examples. 644 WSB 75 northbound. There's trouble in the center lane right at Highway 155, exit 216. That jams you up out of Locust Grove southbound. There's backups because of trouble in the right lane at Highway 138 on 75 south. 85, no issues in the Nuna, but downtown is much worse than normal. The northbound connector is terrible from University Avenue all the way up to the problem that's in the right lane again. Says traffic for taxi man 85 north of 17th Street. Southbound delay is still there from north of the Brooklyn Interchange down the connector south to I-20. Eric.
All right. Some of you have been waiting very, very patiently. Let's get to some of these calls. Mark and McDonough, welcome to the program.
Hey, Eric. I share a lot of common ground with you, and one went to Mercer Law School, and also I'm a preacher's kid.
Oh, excellent. Oh, a preacher's kid.
Yeah, well, and during the day, while I do practice law, I tell folks what I do, but it's not who I am. And in terms of being a person of faith, we always told our children growing up, even when they disagreed with us, we didn't care so much what it was they had to say, but they needed to express it civilly and respectfully. And that same kind of tone carries over in my line of work as well, where you have to disagree all the time, but you just need to do it politely and civilly. And having that long-term perspective of loving people for that long-term perspective that only Christ can give helps anchor that feeling, and people sense that. And in terms of witnessing to folks, it's how you live your life, not what you say.
Yeah, lifestyle is, I think it's so important in being a friend to people. Building those relationships. Yeah, I think that's something that isn't appreciated by a lot of people. Just the relationship building. And you know, I think now as well, just surrounding ourselves. I'm going to jump out right here so I can try to fit in a few calls when we come back after Bort. Sorry to keep you guys on hold.
Atlanta's Evening News with Eric Erickson. Eric Erickson. Set a button on your car radio for every day when you drive home from work. News 95.5 and AM 750 WSB.
Welcome back, folks. Welcome back. Let me go to Sean in Buckhead. Sean, how are you?
Hey, how are you?
Good.
You talking about raising kids?
Yes.
Yes. What we did was just teach them right from wrong.
Yeah.
The rest will fall into place.
Yeah, true. I guess the problem, though, is that nowadays, what a lot of people, particularly people of faith, think are right, the world says is wrong. And just getting your kids to become convinced that your way actually is the right way, as opposed to what everybody else in the world is saying. I think social media and TV and the internet and stuff, I think that makes it a little harder these days. I sound old. Look, sure, okay. Go ahead.
I agree. But your values of your family will go back to them, you know. Teaching right from wrong. I mean, I'm going to tell a real quick story. It's like my son was 4 years old, and I got a phone call saying he was suspended from school for fighting on the school bus. And we got a phone call saying, you know, I said, well, where's the bus driver? And the bus driver said, well, you know, these two kids were picking on this other kid for so long that my son finally said, I'm going to do something about it. And he did.
Good for him.
Yeah, and now he's in the Army. He's going to protect everybody.
Good for him.
But I really feel that if you teach them right from wrong and values and morals, the rest will fall into place.
Yeah, you're right. You are right. I worry so much about the wind and the sound and the fury of the present age. Joy in Sandy Springs, you're going to be the last one tonight. Welcome.
Yes, hi, Eric. How are you?
Good. You got to make it quick. We're almost out of time.
All right. You can express your views honestly and with compassion and not call names. And it's just simple things like that that I think are the things people should teach their children. Compassion.
Love and compassion. Yeah, I think that's probably right. I'm a worrier. You know, a friend of mine, his home motto is, why pray when you can worry? I kind of feel the same way. All right, folks, I'm out of time. I'll be back tomorrow with news and politics and culture, I promise.